Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, and my guest, coming up to 30 years. If we go back to 1985, I was in Kerry, number one, and then there was this footballer of amazing fame, he was entering the field of politics. So Jimmy Deanahan, you can be the minister for the newly appointed minister for the diaspora, but I would say that most people you meet will be thinking about the four medals, All-Ireland medals in a row, and the fifth one when Mayo almost beat you. But anyway, that's beside the point. That's such a touchy subject, I won't even go there. How are you?
Great, and I'm delighted to be back on your show again. It must be the fifth or sixth time, going right back to 1985, and I must say that I couldn't really do New York or visit New York without going on your show, because I know that I reach a very wide audience, a very receptive audience, an audience that listens, and it's great, I suppose, to give them an update on what's happening in Ireland at this moment of time. And I think over the years I've been always very honest with people, whether the economy was going good or whether we've been challenged or what direction we're taking as a country.
I want to, before we get into your newly created job, which kind of puts you in charge of 70 million people around the world of Irish extraction, I want to talk about the government today and the economy, the progress that has been made, and particularly recently. Maybe you can fill us in on that.
Well, I've been on two occasions over the past 3 years, I suppose, since the present government was formed. And at the beginning, it was very challenging, where we had to make huge cutbacks. And that resulted in pain right across society in Ireland. Everybody shared that pain, irrespective of what level in society you were at. And that included people who were working and people who were on assistance and national agencies. So everybody shared that pain right across the whole, I suppose, economic spectrum. And thankfully now, we are coming out of, I suppose, that challenging period of time. And at this moment of time, we have a growth rate in the country of 4.7%, and it could even be higher for this year. And that's really positive. And there was an announcement on jobs yesterday, and jobs now are down to 11% from over 15. And now companies are looking for people in Ireland. So there will be that possibility and opportunity for people to go back. Obviously, there's a regional challenge as well, because many of these jobs are in Dublin. Recently, there was a major announcement in Donegal, and people from Donegal now that would like to go back to Ireland certainly should be aware of that. They're looking for something like 500 people. So it's a major announcement, and yeah. Somebody, even my friends in Donegal, like Patrick Copiala, was on to me about it, just if I came to America, Joe McHugh, just to mention it on your program, to get the word out there. Donegal was badly hit, like my own county of Kerry, but now there's some very positive signs, and this announcement really was very positive. So things are turning, there's no doubt about it. We went through a very difficult period, but people really face up to that challenge, unlike maybe other parts of Europe where you had mass demonstrations, where you had damage to property. In Ireland, people took it. Now, maybe they'll take it out on the government in the next election in the ballot box, but certainly people have worked very hard, and they have taken major hits, and they have shared, I suppose, the sacrifice and the pain, but we're emerging from this huge challenge, probably the most economically challenging period in our history to date. And I think we'll emerge as a better country. We've definitely a more sustainable future now. but we have to still be very vigilant and very responsible about how we are handling this new positivity in our economy. And just to say, since I've come here to New York, I've met a large number of people from different walks of life, from different nationalities, and they all know the Irish story. They're all very much aware of it. I suppose they were all attracted to the story when the collapse was there, when the Celtic mm-hmm. Tiger collapsed, when here in the Wall Street Journal was referring to Wild West banking back in 2008. Now it's a different story, and people are fascinated really with the way the economy is turned around, and a lot of that is to do with obviously the sacrifice the people made in Ireland, but also the help we got from people here in Manhattan, for example. This is the nerve center of the world. This is where financial decisions are made that affects the world. This is where, I suppose, the rating agencies decide where a country should have a certain rating, level in order to borrow money on the world market.
Yeah.
We are now borrowing money much cheaper than America itself on the world market. So
maybe you can give us a hand.
Well, I must say, I was in Atlanta 2 years ago, and I saw a great article in one of their economic magazines, how the USA could learn from Ireland. That was 2 years ago. Yeah. So certainly, look, we are paying our debts. We have, I suppose, a lot of our debt. A huge proportion of it is banking debt that we use to bail out failed banks. We will get some of that back again, no doubt. But certainly our debt is very manageable now. And at this moment of time, it's probably 112% of our GDP. But a portion of that is banking debt. And I would say in about 3 to 4 years, possibly, our national debt GDP ratio would be down to 90%. And that is the norm across Europe. So we are certainly heading in the right direction, but there can be no complacency, there can be no let up, and there cannot easy be handouts as well, that in the past, in various ways, and these didn't go to people that were on social protection, these went to people through tax incentives, through tax evasion, in some cases tax avoidance, so all those loopholes now have been closed, so we have a much more streamlined economy. That's functioning very well at the moment, and our collection system obviously has proven to be very effective because we're way ahead of profile as regards the collection of taxes this year.
I would like to refer again to the Wall Street Journal, who on this this very week on Tuesday, buried in the middle of the paper there somewhere, was this paragraph talking about the European economy, the upheaval, and everything, trainee hela, no hope for anything except for Ireland. And it's a long road and has no turning, but as you say, they were also very quick to point out, and not just the Wall Street Journal, I think people were shocked, and definitely media around the world carried the story that the Celtic Tiger, that everything that Ireland was known for throughout the world, had now collapsed, and it was all, you know, wildly overrated in the first place. To have in a short period of time a turnaround like we have, I think it's amazing. But media throughout the world has to acknowledge that when you're talking about Europe, you're not talking about Ireland economically. You're talking about a tremendous, opportunity for other countries to take a look and say it can be done.
Well, we are fortunate, I suppose, in the sense that we're an island nation, but we depend on exports. And certainly we export into a really well-regulated market in the European Union of over 500 million people. And our exports into Europe has been very strong and growing. And also, we're very friendly with the USA.
Yeah.
And we have that huge connection with the USA. It's, for our size, it's probably one of the strongest in the world. And the USA has been really very helpful towards Ireland. most of the job announcements in recent times in the technology industry, they've all been from, most of them have been from the USA. And it's that really strong connection, not just with the Silicon Valley, but with all parts of the USA, really, at this moment of time. There were announcements last week from Philadelphia, for example, when Richard Rubin was over. So it spread right across America. And that, I suppose, support we've got from the USA has been as important as the help we've got from Europe. So we are fortunate in the sense that, I suppose, we are located between America and Europe. We're the closest part of Europe to America, and also we're very well connected to the mainland of Europe historically, and since we joined the EU back in 1973. So Ireland is in a very good location for the future to capitalize on that. And I think the opportunities for Ireland are quite extraordinary. And just when I arrived here last Tuesday evening, I met young people out here, young technology startup companies from Ireland, and they were being mentored by people from Manhattan here, some of the top companies. But speaking to those companies afterwards, they were blown away with the creativity and the innovation of these people. These people were all understated people. I would have only known one of them. I would have heard of one of them back in Ireland. And last night then, met them with venture capital people. And these venture capital people, of course, people who are in venture capital are in there to get a part of a company, to obviously make it attractive for their investors. But they were very impressed as well. So we have produced a whole breed of technologists that are quite unique even in the world. And Irish engineers and software, I suppose, producers and creators are now much sought after all over the world. And that's not being boastful or exaggerating, but they are making an impact. And that comes from the whole, I suppose, education system in Ireland, where in the 90s, there was particular emphasis put on technology in the education system. We drifted away from that to some extent in the noughties, where people opted for maybe law, for medicine, for maybe even maybe business. But now there's a big return again to technology, to computer programming, for example, that we drifted from. And we actually suffered as a result, because technology companies could have placed more jobs in Ireland if the people were available. So the prospects are good at this moment of time.
You know, the highly educated gateway to Europe, English speaking, all of that plays a very significant role, and definitely with the, in connection with North America, that has a lot of advantages as well, which have been recognized.
Well, it has. There is that challenge, I suppose, when people go to Europe, whether it's in business or even for education. In some countries, there is that language difficulty. Now, for many Americans, Spanish is very much the second language here. If they go to Spain, obviously, they don't have any difficulties. But if they go to France, if they don't speak French or Germany, if they don't speak German, there is that difficulty. So there's a huge opportunity for Ireland to attract more people into our universities and technological colleges as well. There's that huge opportunity. And last night, I was at the Smurfit Business School. They had an event here in New York just to thank their supporters here. And 50% of their intake actually are from outside of Ireland. So we are beginning to attract more students into Ireland, but we can do more of that because of our standard of education and also the quality of our teachers and our university lecturers. It's generally regarded as a very high quality. There's huge potential there. I get interns from various universities around the USA, and I've been, I suppose, receiving them since 1989, actually. I have a really good intern at this moment of time, a girl called Amy O'Halloran from Chicago, who's just excellent. But they love that experience. Back in Ireland, they work in government, they work with the Institute of Public Administration, they're attached to Trinity College, so they do academic work as well as they see how the political system works. And that's really, I think, a great insight for them on how politics relates to community and relates to business and relates to how the country works.
We'd have to acknowledge also that in your last position as a cabinet minister in charge of arts and culture, the Gaeltacht, that was a whole new opportunity for Ireland at a very tough time economically. But it was another opportunity to get into a field that had kind of been, you know, marginalized, and we should have saved that. I should have saved that word for when we finally get around to talking about your new job. But when you think of the investment, and again, you know, worldwide, you had to and saw that the art and culture in Ireland and from Ireland was something very well worth investing in.
Very much so. We were in a very difficult position. My colleague Dinny McGinley and myself, Dinny was in charge of the Gaeltacht, and Dinny McGinley from Donegal didn't speak a word of English until he was 13 years of age. So he's a wonderful Irish speaker. And we were challenged. We had to make really serious cutbacks like every other government department, and at the same time support the arts community, because over the Celtic Tiger period, the investment in the arts was quite considerable. So we had to try to maintain the organisations and events that were there, and at the same time make the economies. And we did that, and there were no casualties. The arts organisations had to look for philanthropic donations, which is very big here in the arts in New York, for example. The Lincoln Center, it costs about, I think, $700 million a year to run it, and they fundraise about half of that, well, more than, they fundraise about $500 million, I understand. So I encourage them to look for money outside of taxpayers' funding, government funding, and some of them rose to that challenge. Yeah. And the Arts Council had a special program called RAISE, where they selected a number of organizations and provided funding so that they could take on a professional fundraiser. And they have done that quite successfully. Also, I give an incentive, a small grant system, that if you collected 5,000 euros, for example, if you got a sponsor, and if you could show clearly you got a sponsor, that we matched it with 5,000. And that yielded a considerable amount of funding. So we substituted the decline of funding, the reduction, through other means. But certainly the arts are very vibrant in Ireland, and the Celtic Tiger actually, when it kind of collapsed, challenged the arts community. Yeah. And especially through literature, we've got some really good, I suppose, dramas out of the Celtic, the collapse of the Celtic Tiger, some very good prose and poetry. And also really good, I suppose, visual arts as well, especially contemporary arts, installations and so on, reflecting the collapse of the Celtic Tiger. So it challenged the artistic community, and they responded in different ways. But certainly they were very stretched, I must say, financially. Most people have survived. So hopefully now that there would be no further reductions, we start increasing again. But one particular program that was put in place in 2011 was here in New York and in the USA, but in New York in particular, and that was Imagine Ireland, and €4 million was spent here in New York and the USA on that program. And certainly I'm sure it had some impact in repairing our damaged image at that particular time. Some people would say that it was a lost opportunity because it was a lot of money to spend in New York at that particular time in the USA. But still, it made a statement that Ireland was still prepared to invest in the arts even in its darkest moment. And I'm delighted that the funding has continued through Culture Ireland, and I intend in 2015 hopefully to have a few major cultural events here, which mm-hmm. if they come to fruition, we'll talk about, Adrian. I don't mm-hmm. want to be building up expectations here in New York, because New York is a special place for Ireland, for indeed for culture. It's the melting pot of the world. It's where it all happens financially, but also culturally. And so it's a great place to make a statement about yourself or a country. And I would hope that we can do that in 2015 with a number of initiatives that I'm discussing with Brendan Graham, for example, at yes. the moment, who is very well known in America, whose great composition, You Raise Me Up, mm-hmm. you know, it has been part of the Super Bowl. It was there at the anniversary of Martin Luther King, for example. It features major events.
Absolutely.
At the whole death and funeral of Nelson Mandela at the Olympic Games. So it's yeah. extraordinary. And then he has that great one, of course, Isle of Hope and Isle of Tears.
Yes.
So hopefully we're putting together a composition at the moment, and hopefully it will work. And Bill Whelan as well is doing a special composition that hopefully will come off on Yeats and Yeats's connection.
Yeah, that's next year as well.
It's 2015, yeah. and there is a fund there, $500,000. So I would hope that a lot of events will happen here in 2015. On different aspects of Irish culture, especially on Yeats, obviously, but also on 2016, because it's the 100th anniversary of 1916, and both Barbara Jones, we discussed this the other night with yourself and others, we are very anxious to start the program immediately, so we hope even to have something maybe in January as
right.
regards commemorating 2016, just shown the connection between New York and America generally,
yes.
and the influence they had in the 1916 rising. People like John Dewey, for example. Patrick Pearse came over here in 1914. Actually, he came over fundraising,
yeah.
Like most people do, I suppose, even all the time, to save the school, St. Enda's. More than a political, I suppose,
yeah.
visit here. And then you had Casement coming here, and Dubai influenced Casement to go to Germany to recruit there some of the prisoners that were out there,
right.
Prisoners of war, of the First World War. So that huge connection between New York and 1916, where over $100,000 dollars at the time, that was a lot of money back then, was donated to buying arms and to other supports
yes.
For the IRB through Canagale here in New York, and through, you know, a number of other people
yeah.
as well as John Dewey, who then of course you had Donovan Rossa in 2013 or in 1913. He died in New York, and his funeral really was a major event in the
mm-hmm.
consciousness of Irish nationalism, especially give Patrick Pearse an opportunity maybe to maybe redefine our nationalism at that time. So there's a huge connection here. And Tom Clark, of course, he founded a newspaper here with John Dewey, and that was really very important as well. And during the period of the War of Independence, as you know, John Dewey had a newspaper here for 3 years. He called it
yeah.
the Irish Press.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously De Valera must have taken that name when he opened his own Irish Press back behind in Dublin in the 30s. So there's a huge connection there, and there's a huge archive there as well. So that archive now is time that
yeah.
it would be exposed to people. So people will know exactly how people were thinking through what they wrote that time,
right.
what they were saying, what they were thinking. It's different hindsight, you know, as an exact science, but we want to know exactly what people were thinking at that time, not a kind of a revisionist attitude towards it. We have to know the original source and the primary source. That's what history is all about. And New York will play a very important role there.
We've managed, again, I would say, New York as a leader in making St. Patrick's Day, St. Patrick's Week, St. Patrick's Month, St. Patrick's Season. I think one of the what I like hearing coming from your government is that 2016 will be a season. It's not just going to be, you know, the Easter weekend. A year of again, going back to cultural events and historic.
Well, it's going to be a year of commemoration, and it's going to be a year with major emphasis on Irish culture. And the 1916 Rising was as much a cultural revolution as anything else. And I suppose it was inspired by Yeats through his writing.
Right.
And afterwards he referred to a terrible beauty that he probably felt he created by influencing people like MacDonagh especially, and some of the poets of the Rising, and Pierce to a certain extent, although Pierce criticised Yeats's writing earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly it was a major cultural revolution. So we have to now analyse what Thomas MacDonagh, what Pierce, Plunkett, Clark and others were saying at that time, and how that really influenced them then to make that ultimate sacrifice, which given their lives for Irish freedom. And this is something that in any way we can understate. We have to appreciate it and respect it and recognize it fully. And also their families deserve to get major recognition, which when I was in charge of commemorations, I was putting the emphasis on the families, that they would be recognized that on the day that they would be very central to the whole commemoration on Easter week, and every way possible that they would be included for the whole year. And I would have close connections with some of those families. For example, the O'Rahilly family, Prownchise is a grandson of the O'Rahillys, a very good friend of mine, and the extended O'Rahilly family. And O'Rahilly is a fascinating individual. Just it's not only the fact that he's from Kerry that makes him special, but O'Rahilly was very much involved in setting up the Irish Volunteers. He was an academic. He was a highly intelligent individual. And again, there was a counter command sent out by Owen McNeill that the Rising wouldn't happen, and there was confusion over it. And O'Rahilly was out in his car. He had a beautiful vintage car. And he met somebody that was heading off towards O'Connell Street. And he just joined them. And he wouldn't miss that opportunity. And he gave up his life, which is a fascinating story. And his vintage car became part of a barricade. And he charged that barricade. And he was shot. And he died. And he wrote, maybe in his own blood, but he wrote a message to his wife, which is now up in a wall inside in Moore Street. So it's a fascinating individual. And then people like Fionnán Lynch, who was in the first Dáil. He was the first Minister for Education. He's from Carsaldean, not a Kerry connection. And we're having an event for him on the 6th of December down at Carsaldean. But an amazing individual. He went out of politics in the early 30s and became a High Court judge, and became very friendly with De Valera, actually, although they were on opposite sides in the Civil War.
Yeah.
But they became very good friends and had regular conversations in Irish over the telephone over a period of time. So, look, it's a fascinating story, that whole story of Irish Revolution, the War of Independence and the Civil War, which was the darkest period in our history because we lost some really great leaders for the future, and how we have evolved since, and how I suppose that civil war difference between people over time has healed to a considerable extent, and how the GAA, for example, which plays a very important role now in the revival of Ireland in different ways because of the business connection now with the GAA all over the world, but also how it got the warring factions together on the field of play afterwards, which was really very important for Ireland. So all of that story needs to be told, and we have to really start telling that story now. We have stood back enough from it. We're mature enough now as a nation to look at this thing in a very positive way, in a very proactive way, rather than maybe in the past in a combative way, or in a, I suppose, in a derisory fashion. So I think that now is the time that as a country we are mature enough to recognise what we have achieved through through revolution, but also since that, how our country has evolved and taken its place among the nations of the earth in every sense of the word. And we have, and people like yourself here, Adrian, in New York, like the considerable influence that you people have here is quite extraordinary. And that is related. You're Irish, you're from an independent republic, but it's all, I suppose, part of what we have become, really, as a country, and a country that's recognised in every part of the world. And even some of those people I met at the Smurfit Business School last night were saying that to be Irish now, no matter where you are, is a major advantage. To be able to say you're Irish in the civilised part of this world, in the part in where business is happening, being Irish is a major introduction. And one individual last night was saying to me that actually other people, countries, they kind of envy that a bit, that they can't have the same kind of card to play when it's coming to making business connections. So it's a great calling card.
In 2000, the year 2000, I was fortunate to be on the task force on policy towards immigrants as co-founder of Irish Outreach at Catholic Charities. Monsignor Murray and myself had made several trips to Ireland to talk about immigrants, to talk about the marginalised immigrants, the Irish government's new responsibility to recognise that many of those immigrants left because Ireland could not afford to keep them. And but among the many items, and one that we came out of that is that Ireland should have a minister for the diaspora. Well, many great things have happened through those years, including, of course, the generosity of the Irish government in good times and in bad, in helping out, agencies, immigrant agencies throughout the United States, for that matter, throughout the world. You bring us tidings this year, which we kind of take for granted now, but the Irish government is still funding and to a great degree providing that opportunity, which you mentioned earlier about when you have the blessing of the Irish government, when you have the Irish government putting up money, it is much easier for us to go to not only philanthropic organizations, but to government organizations and say, the Irish government are putting this up, this is a matching fund. That has magic, which we couldn't possibly do without.
Well, first of all, I'd like to recognize your work, and Monsignor Murray is a man I got to know, I suppose, back in the 80s through immigration reform, and he was a powerful, considerable individual, an immense individual, actually, that had major power here in New York and outside of New York as well. And that actually advisory committee that was set up at that time resulted in the Immigrant Abroad Unit being set up in the Department of Foreign Affairs, which really has resulted in the program now. Mm-hmm. And since 2004, over $127 million has been spent on the program, supporting welfare centres here in the USA, in the UK, and in several parts of the world. Mm-hmm. There's no other country in the world that has spent that kind of money on its diaspora. So we should be very proud of that. It reached 15 million at one stage per annum, but then was reduced over the period, you know, when we were economically challenged the past 6 years. But this particular year, for example, funding for America is up 7%.
Right.
And I was able to announce the other night there's about 1 million going into organizations here in New York, which is considerable.
Very.
And, you know, I would hope as well that I'd be able to make an announcement, hopefully before Christmas, on some funding maybe for the J here, for Shannon Gaze, for example.
Absolutely.
I suppose, Gaelic Park as well. I don't think they're quite ready yet. But the Jay are doing such a tremendous job here, and Shannon Gay's club are doing a particular fine job, I must say, here in New York. So it's all really very, very positive. And it's because of that program, and it's because of you people, when you looked at it. I read that report, actually. It was the first report I read, and it was a really good report. And there were a number of actions in it. And what I noticed is that all of these actions have been implemented. Now, at this moment of time, we're looking at another diaspora strategy. At the last Global Economic Forum, it was decided that we would look at our diaspora strategy and update it. So that will be ready by Christmas, and I look forward to having a discussion with you on it. And basically, that will be one of the actions, will be achievable actions.
Yeah.
It will not be aspirational. And your report that time, the work that you did, Monsignor Murray and others, resulted in that particular report, which set up the unit, which is very important, also funded that unit, and other actions as well. And one thing we have, Adrian, we're very fortunate that we have a whole network of embassies, and we've increased those, and consulate generals that we are in at this moment of time around the world. And now people like Anya, McKillicuddy, and Barbara Jones, we have a really dynamic group of people. Here in New York, it's mostly women, I notice, but
they're
really
too
keen in connecting. And say, Anna McKillicuddy, Anna has been a great Gaelic footballer, played in London, played with Dublin, and now here in New York.
And the sighting of her.
Well, she's a powerful woman. And Barbara Jones actually has that great connection as well with Northern Ireland, and she's been very much involved in the whole process up there up to now. The whole issues, you know, with flags and with marches and so on. So she brings considerable experience with her.
Absolutely.
And she really wants to make that connection. So going back to, I suppose, one of the recommendations in that report was that the Minister for the Diaspora, and now it has happened. So I'm delighted to be the first Minister for the Diaspora. It is really challenging. But I think with people like you around the world to give me advice, you're at this a long time.
I think it would be, Minister, it would be only right and proper to say that in addition to the major investment of money from the Irish government, probably as important, if not more so, was the delivery of the embassies, of the consulates, particularly in the United States. They became a part and parcel of it. So that in addition to the check, what we got and what the consulates have done, and we've been very lucky in New York, and I think that continues now with Barbara and Anna here. But that is what really has teeth in it. Sometimes the check is forgotten, but to have that, you're saying no other ethnic group has that kind of support in terms of money. I don't think any other ethnic group would have as much cooperation and contact, and we know it in particular here.
Yeah, it's quite extraordinary, and this is happening here in New York, it's happening in London and other centres around the world, and it's that really interaction and that collaboration between the Irish community and official Ireland that's making this so dynamic and successful as well. And I can see this growing, actually, because I'm adopting a very much an interagency approach towards the whole diaspora issue. So bringing all the other agencies together as well, they have all a responsibility working through our Consul General's office, our ambassadors. So I can actually see this becoming a very powerful tool. And we can match, I think, the Israelis. We have different challenges than they have, but I think that we have possibly, in a way, we have a very good story to tell. They have different reasons for their diaspora. We have certainly a very good reason for ours. We can match the Indians, the Chinese, who have all developed sophisticated diaspora structures in recent years,
mm-hmm.
but the Irish diaspora has been there for years in that connection and through remittances, like the American sure. dollar kept a lot of parts of Ireland going for years.
And the parcel from America.
The parcel from America, and we all knew, like, who was getting the clothes, because you'd see some nice coloured trousers or some
right.
nice shirt appearing somewhere, and you'd always know who was getting the parcel from America, for example.
Yeah.
But it was great, and it kept Ireland going, and the American tourism to Ireland, every aspect, look, and I'm being very positive here today
yeah.
about that American connection, but it's real, it has happened, it continues to happen, and there's that great respect and connection there, I suppose appreciation for each other's country, that this is something that we must build on. First of all, we do recognise it, but that
right.
is universally recognised. And that great platform that we have there in connection between both countries, that we work in it for our mutual benefit as well, I think is very important.
You have 70 million people of Irish extraction around the world. I can also tell you, though, that we were not surprised here, because no matter what hat you wore in throughout your political career thus far, we assumed that you were minister for the diaspora when it came to America. So maybe the other countries would be indeed very happy too. But one of the things that we do agree on is that we do have to somehow coordinate and pool our resources in immigrant services. We have to learn from one another. That's what the task force brought up in the first place, and that is that we should...
Well, one thing that we are doing in 2015 is having a civic forum in
right.
Dublin. So we are going to bring the various centres from all over the world together
mm-hmm.
so that we will examine good practice, good projects that are going on, good programmes, and that people can learn from each other.
Absolutely.
And one issue at the moment, actually, that's been mentioned is the whole issue of mental health. And it's just not just unique to Irish people. It's
yeah.
not just the Irish immigrant when they leave Ireland that they're affected by it. Young people now, especially with just modern living and the changes in how we communicate and so on, are more challenged mentally. But there is an issue here in New York, there's an issue in London and other centres. So one of the programmes that I would like to put in place here with the programme of immigrant support is a whole one gauged on mental health. And
absolutely.
I would hope that the various centres here in
yeah.
New York will come together. I'm speaking to three of them later. And
yeah.
And Pieta House, who are a very important group doing great work in Ireland. They've been here in New York, that they will work with them. And we can have a really coordinated approach here to that question here in New York. So hopefully together we can come up with a very innovative program.
Precisely where... we agree, and precisely going back again to the task force, how do we learn from one another? And when you have Pieta House coming to America, the great organization, again, you know, tackling a problem that most people don't even want to talk about. The word suicide is volatile. However, it's real. But to have Pieta House and indeed Console, those organizations from Ireland come here not to fundraise and bring money back to Ireland for their organization, but rather to share their knowledge, to share all of that with us. I think you're onto...
I know it's very important. And just, I suppose, in conclusion here, Adrian, I would see my ministry as one of giving, not asking. And I would see my ministry as providing information, looking at the tools through which we provide that information, and that would be mostly through technology, giving from the point of view of immigrant welfare, also giving from the point of view of business, building business networks, which is very important because they are the people that provide us with the funding for welfare down the road. So it's going to be a very giving ministry. I do have a very good staff. It spans both the Taoiseach's department and the Department of Foreign Affairs, so there is coordination there between the Secretary Generals of both departments. So it's quite exciting, and it's going to be a very, very exciting, dynamic program over the next year. And I will have a strategy then to work on, so I will have an action plan, and I'll be ticking boxes. So at the end of it, I'll be judged on my action plan.
And the
boxes I'll tick.
Minister for the Diaspora Friends, Jimmy Deanahan, TD, and congratulations on your no better man. And I say that despite the fact that your home county has always treated Mayo kind of poorly on the field, but and we brought this up many times before. I know you're not going to help us out in that area. Maybe we'll have a word with the Taoiseach next week.
Well, and thank you very much. And look, Kerry, we were rather lucky against Mayo in both games this year. Mayo had the first game won, 5 points up, 5 minutes to go. They should have won it. The next game down in Limerick, I was sitting right at the back of the Mayo goalkeeper when he took that free to win the game. It was all over. And it seemed to be heading over the bar.
Were you flashing your medals, maybe, in the sun?
Maybe, but it just seemed to drop shot. And so, it could have been Mayo's year. One thing, Guy Keane O'Neill, who was the physical trainer for Mayo, was with Mayo 2 years ago, and Eamon Fitzmaurice, who happens to be a club mate of mine, convinced him to train Kerry. And I think that was the most important difference between them. A lot of people don't realise that. I know from the players, actually my wife's nephew plays with Kerry, I know from them that the approach was really very scientific. And that was probably the difference that made Kerry this year. So if I was Mayo, I'd be looking maybe to encourage Keane O'Neill to go back and operate on a scientific basis to do their training. So
I have my own theory, Jimmy, on that one, and I say if Mayo wins the All-Ireland final, we'll demand a rematch because we're much better losers than most other counties in Ireland. Thank you for being with us. Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network USA.